Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. We are back with Divine Intervention, and after a couple of weeks meandering through the world of beer, we are back with a wine. And certainly it's a wine I've seen quite often on restaurant wine lists. I have enjoyed in restaurants. You can find it fairly frequently. It's made with two of the noble grapes from the Burgundy region of France, which also I think you'll find in Champagne. Am I right, food and wine guru Michael Olivier?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a classical sort of base wine blend for a champagne, 60% Chardonnay, 40% Pinot Noir.
And of course, having almost introduced Michael Olivier, our wine expert, I'd better quickly introduce the wine we're tasting. It's from Haut-Cabrières, a French hook producer. It's a Chardonnay Pinot Noir, and it's from 2014. So it's almost as youthful as my first guest in the studio, Ian Cruickshanks from the Institute of Brace Relations. Hello, Ian.
It's not going to last that long, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if somebody had laid you down, you'd be a bit fruitier and more pleasant on the palate.
Laying is one thing. Laying down is not quite the same.
Second guest, once again, he's a beer expert, but I'm sure we can get him to stray from his comfort zone into the world of wine. Stuart Thompson from Loxton Lager. Stuart, great to see you again.
Hi, John. Thank you.
And last but not least at all, I always introduce you last. Malcolm McDonald, my apologies. You're first next time, I promise.
Great to be here.
Malcolm from Tursos.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Stuart, what do you make of this?
I really like this. I probably need guidance here from the Cape Boffins, but to me what they've done here is they've given us a really, really friendly, accessible, grape-based Chardonnay wine. I think there was a time when a lot of the Chardonnays, people got, I think, over-enthusiastic with wood, and I think they overdid it with barrels or even with sort of giant bouquets garnis of oak chips and things like that. So one felt a little bit as though you were licking the floor in a country tavern. I think this is a very, very civilized wine. It's light, it's fruity, it's an absolute joy to taste. Nothing wrong at all, and everything right from my limited perspective.
Well, Michael, we've had one very positive rating. What are your views on this wine, and what can you tell us about it?
Well, it's quite interesting. This is the 20th vintage of this wine, 2014, and two grapes that are very close to the Van Arnhem family, which owns Haut-Cabrières, and what they've done is they've taken the Burgundian varieties of Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, also of course two of the three grapes from Champagne, and they've just created this absolutely stunning blend. Wonderful fruit, great acidity, lovely food wine, and just this massive fruit. There's nice and ripe white flesh peaches there. There's some sort of red berry fruit from the Pinot Noir. Lovely feel in the mouth. Great balance of fruit and acidity and length of aftertaste. That's a really, really nice wine, this.
Malcolm McDonald, you're not recoiling from it?
No, this is one of my all-time favorites. I'm a great, great fan of Pinot Noir. And this certainly is a nice, lighter way of experiencing that in an absolutely, absolutely fantastic flavor. Light, fresh, just something you can enjoy on a Friday afternoon like this.
To take a word that Stuart used, civilized. It really is. It's a wine one can have at any time of the day with almost any food, and it doesn't need that. It can certainly be drunk on its own, and I have to say that it is one of my absolute favorites. And the interesting thing is that going to one of the very big liquor wholesalers here in Joburg, they say this is wine that they invariably run out of. Before they get into the third quarter of the year, there is no more of that particular vintage. That's quite a good sign on its own. That points to a good combination of quality and fair pricing.
And of course, Michael, it's a very versatile wine in terms of what you can eat with it. to as a wine to accompany food. You'll recall that recently we did a few podcasts with Dino Fagus of Prosopa Restaurant in Pretoria, and he does a mezze platter, a mixture of Greek nibbles and dips and so on. I've had this wine with that sort of food and loved it. I think if you were to have a Spanish tapas platter, again, it just goes very well with a whole variety of Mediterranean foods. And of course, I think it would go very well with seafood, with shellfish.
Absolutely. I think for me, one of the virtues of this wine is that you have the breadth of flavor that you get from the Chardonnay. Really nice, elegant, wonderful sort of grapiness to it. And then you've got the Pinot Noir coming in from the side there with that sort of red berry acidity. It's, as Ian said, it's a great glass on its own. But I mean, this could happily tackle some pork fillet in a creamy sauce, or a veal chop that you've done on the braai. It'll handle cheese beautifully. I mean, a nice soft Gerds cheese on a crisp piece of toasted ciabatta. Just it's a delicious wine. This, and as Ian says, hugely popular, hugely successful.
But also, I don't think you'd need to eat in self-defense, Michael, because it's so classy that you could actually sit and you could contemplate the universe from your front porch with this and nothing else, and I don't think you'd feel shortchanged by that experience.
And Michael, what would you compare this to? Because as we said at the beginning, it is a blend of two different cultivars, two different grape varieties. It's maybe a bit sweeter than some of the drier white wines I'm more used to drinking. Can you suggest any benchmarks for this, or is it in a world of its own?
It's almost in a class of its own. And the interesting thing is, this is almost as dry a wine as you can get. Dry wine is classified between 1 and 5 grams per litre of residual sugar, and this has 1.8 grams. So it really is, and that sweetness you're getting is a sort of perceived sweetness from the Chardonnay, that lovely sort of elegance. But, you know, I think probably the closest that you would get would be an unwooded Chardonnay, which would give you that freshness and that breadth of flavour as well.
And Michael, while we're chatting, a few weeks ago, you will recall it was reported that in their spat with the Europeans, Russia was closing its borders to a number of agricultural products from the European Union, the US, Canada, Australia, and so on. Surely our winemakers should have been on the first plane to Moscow following that, assuming that there are no ethical problems for us doing business with Russia, because as members of the BRICS club, one would assume the door would be open to a lot more South African wine exports to that part of the world.
Well, I hope that the door would be open, but a lot of our people are selling huge quantities of wine in Russia, you know.
Well, that's good, and long may it continue. Unless, of course, you think Putin is an evil bugger, and we don't want to do business with him. But until our government decides there are formal sanctions, I think our winemakers should take the lead from them. Stuart, in terms of export, do you ever see Loxton on the world stage? Has it emerged on the world stage at all? Competitions or anything?
It has been seen in Botswana. I'll say no more than that. Very close to the border, just on the other side. Just on this wine, I just very quickly want to ask Michael, the Van Arnhem family, the patriarch there was Achim, wasn't it? This has got Takwan's name. Is that his son or nephew? Or is that... So we've got a substantial dynasty of top wine immigrants now adding value to the Cape.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Baroness Theodora Van Arnhem, who was Achim's mother, was a great character and a lovely, lovely lady. And I mean, she used to do the cellar tours on Saturday mornings and happily take the top off a sparkling MCC bottle with a saber. Oh, so wow. Really, this is now down into the third generation, and a couple of Takawan sisters have children as well, so they're fourth generation now.
And final thoughts from Ian Cruikshanks on that earlier question I was asking about the Russians and South African wine exports in general. Would you like to see a more concerted drive to get the best of South African wine, beer, brandy, port, even if we can't call it that, onto the world stage, into foreign markets? Because exports are pretty important to our country.
Absolutely essential. And I just wonder if very often our producers here, whatever the product is, don't concentrate hard enough on searching out those quick opportunities, like you just did, and saying, look, Russia's closed some of its borders to European exporters. There's an opportunity. Let's move quickly and efficiently. I think it would be an excellent opportunity. I've had European visitors here, and they said, what do you mean this is just a wine that you have every day? This is extraordinarily good. So it would get international recognition.
And Malcolm MacDonald, obviously it's very difficult to sit on a case of wine. Well, you can sit on a case of wine, but to conserve a case of wine, particularly if you've got teenage kids. But do you think this is the sort of wine which you could keep for a few years and which might actually improve with age? Are we drinking it too young?
I think it's okay now. I don't think it'll deteriorate at all. I think it will be just fine for a good few years. I'm not really one who buys huge cases of stuff because I live in a very small apartment. And so I tend to, you know, buy what I consume and keep a small stock. But obviously someone with a big cellar, something like this, I don't think would last very long.
Well, I buy what I consume and I drink it by the case. that's a different matter. Michael Olivier, same question. Does this have longevity?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you've got two great varieties, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. You've got superb winemaking. The wine has every single pointer to good quality, that wonderful fresh acidity, amazing length of aftertaste. I mean, this wine, if properly stored, would go 8 to 10 years and still be absolutely brilliant.
And good winemaking, the disciplines are rather like brewing, aren't they? It's sort of 80 to 90% paper cleaning, 10 to 20% paperwork, and the balance is fun and profit.
Ian Cruickshanks, you had a final thought.
I would like to say that I came across a bottle that I had kept in the dim reaches of my cellar for, I think it was 2010 or 2011, and I had it this year, and it was noticeably more depth to the taste and very interesting. Mm. So yes, the answer is it will keep. How much longer, I don't know.
So it's not just Cruickshanks that's doing the ageing, it's his wines
that's
as well.
Right.
Once again, I'm afraid we're out of time, but once again, many thanks to our food and wine guru down in the Cape. I should mention this every time, Michael, because we're so immensely proud of you. Winner of the Eat Out Lifetime Achievement Award for services to gastronomy and gluttony. Michael, lovely to chat to you. Chat to you next week.
John, thank you so much.
And thanks to our studio guests, to Stuart Thompson. Lovely seeing you again. Third time in a row.
Thanks very much.
We'll let
you
in one more time and then we'll shuffle the deck a little bit. Ian Cruickshanks, thanks a lot. You came at rather short notice, but we're delighted that you could join us again this week.
Very pleased to be part of shuffling the deck. Thank you.
And thanks again, not only for contributing to the tasting, but for all his technical services to Divine Intervention, Malcolm MacDonald from Tersos. Malcolm,
great to be here.
Lovely to see you again. I'm John Fraser. This has been Divine Intervention.